KALW.
When I came back into the community, some of those guards were up and I didn't know how to share that I had been previously incarcerated.
Today, what it's like to return home after spending time in prison.
Graduated high school in prison, got a college degree in prison. Of course, that's why I'm at the university now. The only thing I didn't really count on is that there wouldn't be as many resources for us neurodiverse people yet.
We'll hear three stories on childhood trauma, embracing neurological differences, and putting your heart out there again.
And we out here doing great things. Like, I'm looking at each of you right now, and you have, like, bright eyes. I see the future.
Stories of life on the outside. It's the newest episode of Uncuffed. Stay tuned. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. You may be familiar with Uncuffed, our podcast and training program, highlighting the voices and stories of people inside California prisons. We've been airing episodes produced in San Quentin and Solano state prisons for over a decade on Cross Currents. Today, though, Uncuffed is doing something a little different. We're going to hear the stories of people who've recently returned home from prison. Last year, former San Quentin producer and podcast co-founder Tommy Shakur Ross taught the first ever Uncuffed audio storytelling class for recently returned residents. A dozen formerly incarcerated people learned how to interview each other and create their own stories and their own friendships. We brought three of them back to KALW Studios to talk about their pieces and their experiences getting their stories into the world. We'll join host Tommy Shakur Ross as he talks to Anthony Jefferson, Christopher Roberts, and Jamal J. Morgan. First up, we'll hear Anthony's piece on what dating is like after prison.
Well, I'm a returned citizen of over 8 years. I am currently a proud owner of my own catering business, which is called Renegade Catering. And I'm also an actor and an activist here in the Oakland area. I'm from a small Southern California beach town called Hermosa Beach, California. There are times when I was incarcerated that my sister would purposely put coconut oil and cinnamon on my letters to remind me of home. By grace, all things great and small, discharged my parole number in 2021. You know, there are the kind of mundane challenges that a returned citizen faces, getting your ID together, a physical, meeting your parole officer. And those challenges I was prepared for because I had set a plan, a course of action for my success returning into the community. But that word community means more to some of us than it may mean to just the average listener. To commune with, to be a part of, was my big, big challenge. We all do what when we're first children? We are all held. And I, being a healthy young man coming out of incarceration, wanted to be held and wanted to hold somebody. But that was that big hurdle that was staring me right in the face, and I didn't know how to deal with it. I didn't know how to meet women. I'd forgotten because I'd been relating to men and the pitfalls that happen when you're in prison. So I was very guarded in prison. And when I came home back into the community, some of those guards were up and I didn't know how to share that I had been previously incarcerated. In fact, I didn't. I was the chameleon. I did everything but, for lack of a better term, tell the truth. In the work environment, as a chef or as a line clerk, as I was at the time, you build relationships through showing up every day, checking your feelings at the door, performing your duties in a timely manner, answering yes, chef, no, chef, being kind and considerate to my other employees. If they weren't a little behind, I would help. If I was behind, they would help. So that to me was bridging those relationship gaps that I was missing. But again, it didn't happen in my, I guess for lack of a better term, my romantic life. Because although I wasn't sharing with my fellow employees that I was formerly incarcerated, it didn't matter, right? And I just developed that ideology, which was false, that it didn't matter. You know, I was just me, accept me for who I am as you see me today. And what I found out is I probably robbed myself of some really meaningful relationships because that last barrier hadn't been deconstructed and reformed. And then I got an acting job where I had to tell the story, but I wasn't telling my story. I was telling another person's story. And when we were doing panels, people would ask, well, what does it feel like? What does it look like? And I began sharing the feeling, the looking, until one day I met a young lady and it leapt out of my mouth. It literally left, hey, before this goes any further, I'd like to share with you something that's really, really tough for me to say, but I feel it's necessary before we go any further. And she kind of looked at me quizzically, and she did the most magical thing that I'd ever seen. Instead of pulling away, she leaned in. My mind was blown, and I shared the story with her. She did something else that kind of rocked my world. She reached across the table, put her hand on top of mine, and said, "That's okay." And I shared my dreams, my wildest dreams, and the fact that I wanted to be held by somebody who wanted to be held by me.
Wow, I gave up the wild on that. Like, in just a glimpse, you shared so much with us, right? But so wait a minute, before you respond, I just want to just take a moment, just take a breath. Like, for me, that was really deep. Like,
yeah,
we talk about vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what it's like for you, AJ, hearing that today?
It's bringing up the fact that what we did at Uncuffed back then has helped to heal me now. What we are doing today, and I, you know what? I mentioned safety and feeling secure. I must have felt all kinds of like Brinks safety and secure. I'm telling you, because I didn't realize how far I'd gone in. On the second listening, I feel myself on the verge of shedding tears.
I see mm-hmm. you.
Right? I really felt that I was on the verge of shedding tears. And I thought I was being light. I really did, man. I thought I was being light, but I guess I dove into the deep water and got cleansed.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's so many things that you shared up, but I want to hear from Chris and Jay. So what came up for y'all, like hearing AJ's story again here today?
The hug and the hold and the stuff, it's a huge, and being accepted for where you're at. I know in relationships post-incarceration, that's huge. I mean, it's vulnerable because you're in there. You ain't touching me in there. You ain't got no feelings. I ain't working with those. That's huge. Being able to be honest with that and being like, yeah, you know, because we're all human beings. We all just want to be hugged and held and you know what I mean? And we all deserve that. But that's honestly that right there, regardless if you ever went to prison or not, it's real for everyone in this room, I guarantee you, wanting that same thing.
Jay, what's going on with you over there? Talk to us.
Couple of emotions. I can tell that I appreciate how authentic and how genuine it was. You can hear through the audio the feelings and rawness of it. Like, he wasn't faking anything he said in that. You can feel it. So part of me was touched. And I related to him. I kind of actually felt sad too. There's a part of me felt sad because it's like, it made me think about the society that we in now and how caged in he might can feel because, mm-hmm. you know, that person, like he said, we all are like that, but we are in times where masculinity is being redefined and femininity is being defined to where if he sounds like that, some people, they'd be like, oh, you need to be a man. Men don't cry. Men don't want to be held, stuff like that. And I just kind of felt sad because I'm thinking like, If one person's like that, you know, you can't control how somebody else may perceive it. I wish that everybody would take them in and be looking at it from a part like how we're looking at it. But, you know, the dating social scene, so hard when you're like that. And then people say like, oh, you get roasted sometimes. Like,
EJ's a big dude. Yeah. You guys don't see him. He's a big dude. This is not a dude you see on the yard. You just walk by and step on his shoes. This is a big man. Like, this is not a dude that has feelings. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
so I really appreciate that, Chris. And like, like just your expression right now, like it's just the laughter and the humor.
Yeah, he's in love.
He's coming up right now.
Yeah.
And so, like, up next, actually.
Oh, no. Yeah, man, let's hear it.
What happened?
We have another story about becoming comfortable with who you are.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right?
I'm loving it.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story?
Well, my story is just kind of about, you know, education and stuff. And because I like education, I like learning. What really made me want to tell this my story, at least as far as what I'm going through currently, is because I'm going through it right now.
My name is Chris. I'm a 40-year-old neurodiverse ex-felon college student, and I'm from Bay Area. I was born in Vallejo. As a baby, I was in foster care in and out till I was about 5 years old when I met my father and my older sister for the first time. I guess that's when my life started. I moved in with them and I was raised by them. My dad worked a swing shift, so it was pretty much my older sister. She was a couple years older than me. Our relationships weren't good. Fought a lot of animosity, a lot of, you know, fighting over attention and, you know, what little we had, you know, we were always squandering over, fighting over. So relationships were always something of having to meet someone on their level, I guess you could say, but didn't really have any kind of real life experience example, like how a relationship's supposed to be with a, you know, woman and a man, or how even a family's supposed to eat together at a dinner table. So I didn't really have much to model on except for maybe Married with Children in The Simpsons. I used to hug myself, actually, and I used to wish that I had really long arms so that I could like totally reach around and hug myself so then I would never have to cry again. That was my goal. I got long arms, but I still cry, and hugging doesn't work by myself. You know, they have this thing, the class clown. I wasn't a class clown. I wasn't pretty enough for that. But I was the kid that was in the back of the class. I remember third grade, they had a piece of cardboard that would block me from the rest of the students because I was distracting. Always asked a lot of questions, too many questions. And then they started having this special education program started, and they would then have me go to this little office and tell me, you know, that basically just tell me I had problems and without solutions. You know, that kind of went on. That definitely didn't help because it made me more ostracized in the classrooms. But there was something true to it. There was obviously something different in the way I learned. So it led to a lot of pain and grief for me because, you know, as I've seen a lot of other people, when they have shortcomings in other areas, they try to always, you know, we all want to fit in. So we end up doing things that, you know, that might be, you know, riskier. So it didn't end, you know, for me. I was in and out of school and never got a grade, as straight F's all the way through until I, you know, tried to go to college. And then I got diagnosed with a learning disability, and we started to get somewhere with the help, you know, and that was kind of a plus thing for me, getting some help, at least getting started and realizing that, you know, I learned differently and that's okay, you know. When I was incarcerated, I learned something. That I learned that I wasn't alone. I learned that there's a lot of other human beings that have, they learn different too. And they didn't necessarily get a lot of good breaks in their life. And, you know, I'm not to say that that was a direct correlation between them being in a situation that they're in, but it definitely didn't help. And knowing that, it strengthened me to know that I wasn't alone. And then I was able to learn more by sharing and having community and helping other people. So much so, I got graduated high school in prison, got a college degree in prison, and felt strong enough that I could get out and do it again out here and continue. And of course, that's why I'm at the university now. The only thing I didn't really count on is that there wouldn't be as many resources for us neurodiverse people yet. And I say yet because that's the goal we're working on. Well, I like to think of them as a learning ability in a different way of thinking. we're able to, we are blessed with these individuals in our classrooms that have different perceptions of things, that can look outside the box or see things from an angle that we can't necessarily see. And that is a truly, I believe, is a gift. However, there are certain things that you know, they learn differently and you know, maybe need some accommodations or some special tools that will help bring out the best in them. And knowing that they have something to offer, it's been a very good strength to finally hear that you're not wrong or bad or any kind of shame and guilt, that there actually might be people that want to hear your perception because maybe you have the secret to internal life or something, you know, to feel important again for being different. I'm getting chills just talking about it. And what's crazy is those people that were considered special education and special being a derogatory name or word meaning back in the day, it's actually means something. What it's supposed to be is they are special. We are special. We do have something to give and offer. Just want the chance, you know, and I feel strengthened. I feel like, wow, getting off my chest, I feel strong, stronger than I ever have.
So my question to you, or I put this before you because you're far more aware than I am. How do we change that perception? And I'm talking about for the young ones coming up, because I know, I believe, yeah. I won't speak for you, but I believe that that's why you're working so hard and so diligently.
Labels. Even this label itself, even the label neurodiverse and special and all that, those are labels only isolate you. The things that they're asking for is not anything but just like, hey, like, see me. That's all it is, just seeing us, seeing every student in the classroom as something worthwhile to give and not having labels because you don't know what that person is. You don't know what they're going
to
bring.
So after listening to your story, I hear how you were able to, like, in so many words, get the services that you needed for your education while you were in prison. And, I mean, the irony is that you get these services while you were in prison, right? Just imagine if you had those services available to you before you went to prison.
Wow, did you see that response there, bro?
Yes.
That's amazing. You know, I never really thought about that. But sometimes you got to get, I don't know, for lack of better words, hit on the back of the head. You know what I mean? And to kind of see where you're at. I can't say that it was any particular situation, more or less just good people and good vibes. Really going in and going, I have nothing else left to give. Here I am, you know, kind of like when you, not to get religious, but kind of like when you humble yourself and you're going, hey, okay, here I am on my knees. This is it. What's up? You know, here I am. I have no point, nothing else going on, but everything, you know, everything I can give out. And that moment of coming humble for a second and realizing that something opened up. People like you came in my life, came in there and said, hey, you know, check this out. Yeah. But a happy ending for sure, because that's really what it is. There's a lot of good medicine in there if you look for it hard, you know?
But I really appreciate these stories, but you see that, you know, there's need for a systemic change.
Big time.
So with that, you know, I just, let's pivot over to Jay. Jay.
What's up, man? It's good to see you, man. I swear, it's so good to see you. I'm doing good. I'm blessed.
Man, that smile, you know what I mean? I really appreciate that. Let's transition to your piece. Can you just like drop us into your piece?
Sure. So my piece, I decided to spend time on my segment talking about childhood trauma. I feel like that's something that everyone, every single body can relate to, no matter if you're from here, there, this tall, that tall. And it was important to me at the time because I was still reeling. I've lost my mom, dad around that time I was doing that. And at that point, I felt like it was just the focal point of what I wanted to have the discussion based around healing. Sometimes we lose ourselves and not know who we are now because we haven't identified what we haven't got past then. So
okay.
That's what I'm like.
So with that, we're going to.
He's a humble guy. He's the most humble person I've ever met. Like, really, he's so humble.
Yeah, life will humble you.
So we're going to drop into Jay's story. Right. Thank you.
My name is Jamal Morgan, Jay for short. I'm from Pittsburgh, California. I saw my best friend get killed when I was 12 across the street at our high school. So that mentally has scarred me for a long time, knowing that we can be killed at any age and at any time. And, you know, he was robbed of his innocence. He was probably like 13 at the time, so he didn't even get to live life. So a lot of psychological and mental scarring and trauma came from my environment. We went to go
to our high school to play basketball. We used to be able to hop the fence and just play basketball in the back of the high school. We're walking to the front to go get the ball or something. I just remember we needed to just walk to the front to go get something. And he's across the street. And I remember a silver car pulled up, all tinted windows and whatnot. They were talking to him and whatnot. Me, I was scared at the time, you know, because I don't be trusting people like that, whatever. I assumed my best friend knew them because he was talking to him in the car. And you just hear some loud ringing going off and the car skirt off. And I see my friend just there on the bench. We had like a blue bench that was right in front of a bus stop there. And it was just so in slow motion. Like, I'm not registering that he got shot or anything. Like, I'm still so young. It's just, but I see him physically looking like, it looked like a ghost. Or he just looked like something that happened to him. So when I ran over to him, asked him if he was okay, he couldn't say anything. And then I seen like blood coming out and whatnot. And I panicked. I didn't know what to do. And later on, I ended up eventually hearing that he had been shot and he didn't make it. The feeling was nauseating, unreal. It was a plethora of emotions that I now as an adult can pinpoint. But in the moment as a kid, I just felt lost seeing him get shot. And then hearing that, okay, you got shot and, he's, you know, not coming back. You know, they try to explain stuff to a 12-year-old and not make it as blunt as possible. And it kind of made me go numb and kind of contributed to why I got into this street stuff, because I felt like I had to protect myself at that. I was walking with my head on a swivel. If you can die at 12, 13, you can, you know, you can pretty much do anything to anybody. So my childhood trauma taught me that there is a pattern if you don't try to heal from it and try to address it, right? That the victims actually can end up becoming what you were victimized by and then hurting other people. My childhood trauma should teach you that, one, everyone has a story, and I'm sure that everyone has childhood trauma, but that that we can overcome a lot of our childhood trauma and not fall victim to it and not let that be the reason why we harm others or give others, not even just childhood trauma, but trauma as adults. I go back to the juvenile hall that I was in and speak with kids there. I go to my group home that I got out of and I speak with them. I just do a lot of volunteer work and try to share my story and try to be like that opening door for someone who might feel like, you know, they want change as well, but they don't know, or they're just waiting for somebody to kind of lead the way. So I've just been doing a lot of activism, a lot of work to try to address these things. For anybody who's listening, I'm proud of you. Your story is just as important as mine's, even if it doesn't align with what this topic is, right? Whatever is important to you, stand on it and know that you have people out there that's willing to support you and do believe in you. And don't let society make you feel like you're alone. And don't become what society makes you feel like you have to become.
Yeah.
Man.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, Jay.
Wow.
So yeah, that was, you know, a piece, you know, about how our childhood experiences shape us.
There's strength that oozes out from you, man. And I am just so proud to be a part of anything that you do.
Thank you.
Jay, you ever heard of living amends?
Living amends?
Yeah, like living amends, like kind of like what you're saying. Like you can tell the story with like a really okay, like an okayness. Like, I mean, that's I could imagine what that would be like. But I felt like safe when you told that. You talked about being safe. Like I felt like you do not seem like a person that is you know, it's been scarred by that or has been victimized and is now a victimizer themselves. Yeah. I don't even need to see you. I mean, I'm sure people can hear it through this. They can hear it in your words. Not even the words, just how you say them, just of like, it's okay. Like it's you're living an example by how you do that. Thank you for that.
I like Thanks. That. But I'm wondering, like, what was it like for you, like hearing this today, right now?
kind of revealing because, like, that was a year ago, and I can hear where I was at. And I'm glad he said living amends, because one of the things I want to focus on is how he said people can't tell that I've experienced this type of stuff. Well, when I was the day of that recording, I don't know if you remember. Do you remember one of the classes I ended up going off to the side and I ended up mentee? I cried. Yeah. Like, there was a time where, yeah.
Went in another room.
I went in another room and I cried. Well, you know, during half of that recording, I was living in my car. Like, at the time, I was like dead ass homeless. You know what I mean? And, but when I'm with people and the mission is to create a safe environment and stuff like that, I just think about other people before mine's, right?
I just want to say it's really been truly an honor and a pleasure, you know, sitting here at the round table with the fellas. So I just want to say thanks again. It's good seeing you all.
Thank you, Tommy. Thank you for having
us. Go out and do great things in the world.
All right, thank you.
That's what we do.
When's the next one?
That excerpt from the Uncuffed podcast featured stories from Anthony Jefferson, Christopher Roberts, and Jamal J. Morgan. The team also includes Eric Abercrombie, Angela Johnston, Nina Gensler-Debs, and Eli Wertschafter. Our work in prisons is supported by the California Arts Council, the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation, and listeners like you. Hear more by subscribing to Uncuffed on your podcast player. Today's Cross Currents team includes Sandra Halliday, Alastair Boone, James Rowlands, Ganadi Joe Johnson, Victor Tense, Shirin Adel, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega Welch, Sunni Khalid, Angela Johnston, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet, as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.